Please be seated. This is Kevin Juarez Espana versus the United States Attorney General. Anthony Richard Dominguez is here for the petitioner, Juarez Espana. Jennifer Paisner Williams is here for the United States. And Mr. Dominguez, you may begin your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Anthony Dominguez on behalf of petitioner, may it please the court. Here, the immigration judge found that the petitioner did not meet his burden of proof to establish his eligibility for asylum, specifically because he did not submit a key and crucial piece of evidence, which was the final disposition in the criminal investigation of his great uncle Rosendo for the killings of his grandfather and two uncles in 2009. The immigration judge's identification of that crucial or key piece of evidence is critical to the error committed in this case by the immigration judge for not then granting the petitioner a brief continuance in order to attempt to acquire that piece of evidence.
Didn't the BIA, though, make independent findings of that? So let's assume that that's right. In other words, as I understand it, what the immigration judge here did is said, I believe your client, but under the statute, you need corroboration. You asked for some more time. You said no. You had time before. It's been pending a long time, so no. And then use that as a basis to deny. But as I understand the BIA order, made independent findings that were accepted as true, the statements and the testimony, and then found X, Y, and Z, right?
I believe so, Your Honor, but I think these are two different things here as in regards to the continuance that was the motion to continue that the BIA did address, and the idea of a continuance, or the duty to grant a continuance that arises under 1158 B2BII, that specifically arises after the immigration judge finds the three preconditions.
I agree with you. I understand the argument. I understand the point. My point is, even assuming you're right about that, didn't the BIA make independent findings that have nothing to do with the failure to believe your client because there was no corroboration? In other words, as I understand what the BIA said is, even accepting all the evidence, there was no persecution here. The proposed PSG was, one of them was not socially distinct. For the other one, there was no nexus requirement, and there was a third thing. I'm not
remembering. Unable or unwilling to.
Unable or unwilling, right? Yes. So, those are independent. You agree of the procedural error you're discussing, right?
I do. They are independent, right. But in regards to whether or not it would more or less be a harmless error, I think specifically referring to the immigration judge's decision at page 4, he said. But even aside from the lack of corroboration.
So this gets into a problem that I had a discussion with your co-counsel here.
Yes.
And that is, whatever the IJ said, the BIA here had independent reasoning and findings here. It's an extensive order, and it lays out independent grounds for why it reached the conclusion that it did. So isn't that what we review, and not whatever procedural error the IJ may or may not have made here?
So I think you review both. I think it is both the BIA and the immigration judge's decision.
Not where the BIA gives independent grounds and determinations for the finding, right?
I read the BIA decision as more so agreeing with the immigration judge as far as their points, instead of providing alternative reasoning or analysis.
Well, I think that's right, but I think what it says is we agree with the IJ that there was no persecution because there was no basis to find that there was no protection, that the government wouldn't give protection, wasn't willing and able to give protection. Here's why. We agree with the IJ, but those were independent bases from the corroboration procedural error you're talking about, right?
As to the other specific points, yes,
If the IJ or if the BIA, as adopting the IJ's findings but giving its own reasonings, is right on those independent bases, then we don't have to reach the procedural error, even if I happen to agree with you that the right mechanism here is to do what the Ninth Circuit suggests, which is adjourn the hearing, give them time to get the corroboration, and then come back, right?
I still think because the BIA didn't address, and this refers back to the original point I made, although the BIA had the alternative grounds on the specific eligibility points of asylum. When the BIA specifically only addressed the motion to continue, that was the written motion to continue, and not the specific argument that there's an independent duty by the immigration.
So let's say it's a reason consideration issue. So let's say the BIA didn't give reason consideration to your argument. I think it did. I read the order as saying that there was no need to continue either the earlier one or later one, but let's just say there's no reason consideration for that. That error can be harmless where there is independent grounds for which we could affirm or deny the petition here, right?
One of the reasons why we independently challenged the other grounds of the BIA's decision affirming the order of the BIA.
Talk about some of the independent grounds because I don't want to occupy.
No problem, Your Honor.
The one that I think is the strongest for the other side is the persecution one, is the willing and able to
protect,
to protect and enforce the law. It seems to me that there's some evidence to support that in this under substantial evidence. And let me lay it out.
Mm-hmm.
One is, A, that they did make an arrest for the assassination of the first great uncle. Now, I know your claim is that they arrested the wrong guy, they pinned it on the wrong guy, but that does show a willingness to arrest somebody for private harm, especially in the context of family disputes. Two, they did investigate. I know you say it's a shoddy investigation, but they investigated the murder of, I think it's the cousin or uncle too. And then there was, in fact, an arrest of the great uncle here after an investigation for the murder of another great uncle and two cousins. And then we don't know exactly how that came out. I know he said he was released on bond, but there's no indication of how that came out.
Right.
How is that not evidence to support at least some ability and willingness to investigate private family harm in this family?
So a few points, Your Honor. Specifically in regards to the investigation of the cousin's murder, the second murder in 2008, when a cousin specifically identified the great uncle Rosendo as a subject, and there was a police report starting the investigation. When we look at that investigation and that evidence specifically, I believe it said that the investigation was concluded within
45 minutes.
Right after.
I think 45 minutes.
Yeah, okay, yes, yeah. So,
counsel, there's investigations all the time where a witness says this happened, but that there's not sufficient evidence for which you can prove to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt that it happened, that they can't move forward on a prosecution. In other words, that's not an unusual thing. I guess what I'm asking is from the perspective of substantial evidence, is it not enough that the government took the time for a police officer to come down, to talk to witnesses, to investigate a crime, to write a report, that they care about this stuff?
When we're speaking about the ability to protect someone in the context of six family members having been murdered, I don't believe that the starting of an investigation is sufficient. In the larger context of six people have been murdered and who the entire family, and there was additional testimony provided by other witnesses that were stipulated by the government that, yes, we believe that it was committed by this great uncle.
What's the status of Rosendo's case in Guatemala? We don't know, right?
We still don't know.
He bonded out? That's all we know?
The extent we know, which the, of course, the immigration judge did find the petitioner to be credible, and we're supposed to take that credible testimony as truth. All we know is that he is still free and at large and currently possesses the family.
The independent basis that the BIA relies upon is that the law enforcement authorities are taking care of this matter, but we don't know what the result of that proceeding is, right?
As far as we know, there has been no further punishment against him after the initial arrest and him being set.
So he says, I have a well-founded fear of future persecution, and I'd like to support that, corroborate that with whatever the result of that proceeding is in Guatemala. Is that your argument?
I believe the...
What corroboration is he looking for to support that he has a well-founded fear that Rosendo is going to harm him if he returns to Guatemala?
So,
what is the corroboration that your client is looking for?
Well, specifically, the immigration judge was looking for some type of final disposition as to what happened with that case.
Right. That's what's missing here, right?
Correct. As far as we know, he was set free or bailed out. I believe in the transcript test in the testimony, the respondent did allude to some of essentially the corruption problems in Guatemala. He referred to him having a lot of money, which helped him get out and be free to this day. But that was specifically the corroboration that the immigration judge was looking for. So going back specifically to the...
Let me ask you about a different basis, because the BIA gave four independent bases, correct, as I understand it. So one of them is as to one of the PSGs, one of the particular social groups, that there was no social cohesion or social identification regarding that. And as I understand it, it's your burden in when you present a PSG to present evidence of the three characteristics, immutability and two others that are there, including the last one of this sort of social identification. What evidence is there that the PSG that was identified by the BIA was subject to, or what evidence was there that there was social identification for that PSG?
So the PSG that the BIA actually did consider and discuss social visibility was specifically Guatemalan heir to a large plot of agricultural land.
Right. I agree with you.
In the record, we believe that the evidence in regards to the small percentage of land ownership and how the a even smaller percentage of landowners possess a extraordinary
even if I thought that that was enough, even if I thought that was enough, that deals with ownership. And one can understand how an owner of a land can be identified. In other words, I own it, I plant my flag there, my name's on top, you know, Robert's farm. You know that Robert owns the property. But for an heir, which you guys yourselves argue is a contingent thing, how could the society possibly know who's an heir to the property? I mean, it requires you to know who the what the will is, if they're intestate or not, where they are in the familial relationship. I mean, how's that? How could society possibly identify heirs based on evidence of ownership?
I understand your point, Your Honor, and
I'm asking the question. I honestly, I don't know. How is that possible?
I do think that the social visibility does go to, as I mentioned, the small percentage of people that control land in Guatemala.
An heir doesn't, by its nature, doesn't control land.
I agree, but the family itself that is that it may be passed to, I do believe that there is some visibility there. But specifically, I'd just like to point out one last thing. I see my time is up. Because the BIA...
He's a male heir of Julian Juarez agricultural family. And your argument, as I understand it, is that landowners, he's a potential landowner, his mother's going to inherit the property, and then he will inherit it from his mother, that landowners in Guatemala are PSGs. Is that...
So... In specific, so to that PSG specifically, the BIA did not discuss the viability of that PSG. In regards to the PSG that you mentioned, Your Honor, the Guatemalan male heir of Julian Juarez's agricultural family, all they discussed as to that PSG was whether or not he proved that he was a member of that PSG. But because the PSG is a confluence of both land ownership or expected land ownership, in addition to family or kinship, both of which are cognizable and can legitimate a PSG, we believe the confluence of those two things do make this PSG valid. I see my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dominguez. Ms. Williams, for the government.
May it please the court, Jennifer Williams for respondent, the Attorney General. The agency credited Mr. Juarez España's subjective beliefs that his great uncle Rosendo was responsible for killing various male members of the family to get their land, and that he believes he is entitled to inherit his mother's share of the land and is therefore in danger. But an applicant's subjective beliefs, even if credible, are not necessarily sufficient to meet his burden of proof. And in this case, Mr. Juarez España's subjective beliefs are not sufficient to establish his eligibility for asylum or withholding of removal.
Subjective belief? Potentially six heirs have been murdered by gunshots. And he's an heir. And there's no subjective belief that he's going to risk persecution or a gunshot wound when he returns to Guatemala. They were all shot one by one, not at the same time. And there's no fear of persecution if he's returned to Guatemala?
Well, as to some of those killings, mm-hmm. there's no evidence that his great uncle Rosendo was the one responsible for them.
Well, he wants to be able to corroborate the fact that they were all shot by Rosendo.
Well, so that goes to the corroboration finding by the immigration judge, which our position is, as set forth in our brief, was that it was not. The IJ's corroboration finding was not affirmed by the board. But the IJ, making a corroboration finding is separate from finding that an applicant did not meet his burden of proof. A corroboration finding is a procedural finding that relies on the failure to submit a specific identified piece of evidence.
But aren't you under the statute, under 8 U.S.C. 1158B1B2, don't you have... Isn't there an obligation, or I don't know maybe whose affirmative obligation it is, but isn't there room for the applicant to be able to explain why either they don't have the evidence or why they can't reasonably obtain the evidence?
Yes, there is, and that is what happened in this case. There was a prior request for a continuance to submit certain documents prior to the merits hearing. Mm-hmm. My understanding from the record is that the immigration judge denied a further continuance, but then admitted those documents anyway. And then at the hearing, there was extensive discussion about the 2009 murders and the evidence in the record about those murders. And in his decision, the immigration judge preliminarily denied the applications for relief, finding that Mr. Juarez Espana did not submit sufficient corroborating evidence. But that's not a merits finding. So the immigration judge made that finding and then separately went on to find that on the merits, Mr. Juarez Espana did not meet his burden of proof for various reasons. In its decision, which is the decision that this court reviews, the board said it didn't need to reach the corroboration finding because it was affirming the immigration judge's alternate findings on the merits.
I guess, but my question really is sort of like a what comes first is that if the immigration judge says that the applicant did not submit enough corroboration evidence but doesn't tell him what the corroboration evidence would need to be and give then the applicant the opportunity to explain why they don't have the evidence or why they can't obtain the evidence as the statute requires, why is that not an error?
Well, I'm happy to discuss that, but our position still is that that was a finding of the immigration judge that the board did not affirm. So it isn't a basis for this court to review the agency decision below because the board only affirmed the merits denials, not the immigration judge's discussion of missing pieces of corroborating evidence. But as to the corroboration requirement, what the board has said in matter of LAC is that the immigration judge does have to let the applicant know at the hearing what evidence is missing and give him an opportunity to explain its absence. The question is whether, and the Ninth Circuit, I believe, is the only circuit that has held this, but whether the immigration judge then has to give the applicant a continuance to go out and try to obtain that evidence. The Ninth Circuit has said that the immigration judge does. Other circuits have said, consistent with the board, that the immigration judge has to give the applicant an opportunity during the hearing.
The Ninth Circuit says yes, the Sixth Circuit says no, but that's a decision that we review for an abuse of discretion?
Well, I don't believe this court has weighed in one way or the other on whether... In this case, the immigration judge said there is no good cause for a continuance. What the board has said is the immigration judge has to give the applicant an opportunity during the hearing mm-hmm. has to tell the applicant what evidence is missing, and then decides whether there's good cause for a continuance. What the Ninth Circuit has said is it doesn't matter if there's good cause or not for a continuance, there has to be a continuance. But I'd like to reiterate
good cause because we need to know what the result of the legal proceeding is in Guatemala with regard to the prosecution of Mr. Rosendo?
Well, there are two separate issues. One is the immigration judge identification of that missing evidence as a reason to deny the application. But again, that is a procedural finding that was not affirmed by the board. Separate from that procedural finding is a finding as to whether or not he met his burden of proof. It is his burden of proof when he submits his asylum application and supporting evidence to establish his case. And in this case, he testified during his merits hearing that he did not know. He never said, there's evidence out there that if I just have a little more time, I could go find it. He was asked, do you know the outcome of the proceeding against Rosendo? And he said, I don't know. He never suggested that with more time, he could find out. He said, all I know is that he was arrested, he posted bond, and that's sort of it. And as to his currently being free, he speculated that Rosendo was responsible for the 2016 murder. But even in that case, he admitted that there was a police investigation into that murder, and he didn't know the outcome of that either. So
we do know that Guatemalan law enforcement can't provide protection because they didn't provide protection for potentially six other heirs who were murdered by gunshots, maybe by Rosendo.
Well,
the authorities didn't protect the cousins.
But we don't know. Again, it's his burden of proof, and we don't know if they were notified. We have no information about any of this. All we know are the facts of the killings and the evidence that he did submit that, in fact, the police did take some action.
Yeah, that's
they arrested somebody for the initial murder of, they arrested Murdado, I believe, for the initial murder. In 2008, they did investigate. We don't have any results. We don't know what the result of that investigation was, but what we do know is that a year later, they in fact did arrest Rosendo. But again, we don't know the outcome of that, but it's...
So this conversation deals with the persecution issue, but the BIA, as I understand it, made independent findings on the cognizability of the particular social group and nexus, correct?
Yes. So
can you discuss those, please?
Yes. So there are two findings that go to both proposed particular social groups. One is the unable or unwilling that we've been discussing, and the other is the BIA's alternate finding that he failed to establish his membership in either particular social group because being his status as an heir was too speculative.
But there also is there not also a finding that there's not a nexus between the persecution here? Again, assuming persecution, there's not a nexus between persecution and either of the particular social groups, or at least the second one.
So,
and is there not a finding as to the first one that it's not cognizable?
Yes. So as to the other two particular social groups, the first one, the particular social group of Guatemalan heir to a large plot of agricultural land, the BIA found that that was not socially distinct and for the reasons that were previously discussed, that it accepted that landowners might be a socially distinct particular social group. But both the immigration judge and the board concluded that heirs to land, there was no evidence in the record to establish the social significance of that particular group in Guatemalan society.
So there's no nexus between six other murders of his cousins and him being a male heir of Julian Juarez's agricultural family.
So that
the
is
other six people who were murdered. You're telling me there's no nexus between the two?
No, that's. I'll clarify that particular finding. The nexus finding does go to that particular social group, Guatemalan male heir. What the board said was not that there was no nexus in a broader sense, but nexus has to be, for there to be a nexus against a family, there under this court's case law, there has to be evidence of animus against the family itself, and the targeting of the family cannot be incidental to the family group as opposed to another reason. And another reason, it's generally economic. So in this case,
let me ask you this. Is there evidence supporting that finding? Because as I understand it, based on again, accepting everything the petitioner testified is true, he lived as an heir in Guatemala from the time that his grandfather made this split until he left in 2016. He's a male heir. And he has, I think, two other uncles or cousins that also live in Guatemala that have never had anything happen to them. And in other words, is what the BIA is saying there is It isn't the fact that you're an heir that is causing you to die. It's that you are in the way of the great uncle who wants control of this entire plot. That is the problem, right? In other words, heirship or being in the line of intestate is not what's causing anyone to get murdered. What's causing someone to get murdered is they're in the way of a nefarious plan to grab the land.
Yes, that is what the BIA said. It said that the primary motivation, because the BIA accepted his subjective belief that Rosendo was responsible for these murders, but it said he has no animus against the family writ large. He's actually a member of the family. He has no animus against himself. What he's motivated by is greed. And greed is not an animus against a family group per se.
So if you're an heir and you're perfectly fine with the great uncle controlling all the property, then being a male heir of the agricultural family doesn't really mean anything. In fact, there are male heirs in Guatemala who have no intention of living on the property or taking the uncle's claim to the property, who are living perfectly fine and are under no threat, correct?
Yes, exactly. And that formed the basis of the board's nexus determination that it's not animus against the family. Nobody in the family is being targeted if they don't currently have the land and if Rosendo wouldn't be able to get the land from them. That also is the basis for the BIA's finding that his membership in his particular social groups is speculative as well. I mean, it's related. So he may be an heir under the laws of intestate succession, although we don't have any evidence about whether their wills, whether his mother has a will. But what the BIA said about that was, according to his testimony, his mother is currently the legal landowner.
On the first social group, is there any evidence that heirs is a distinctive group in Guatemala? Heirs of land, because the first one isn't related to the family. Are you a large landowner, or are you an heir to a large landowning in Guatemala, right? Is there any evidence in the record that heirs are a distinctive social group?
No, I don't believe there is.
Anything. I mean,
there's evidence about economic inequality in Guatemala.
Sure.
And the board, I believe it was either the board or the immigration judge in their decision, said something about maybe landowners qualify as socially distinct in Guatemala. But there's no evidence in the record that heirs are viewed as a social group in Guatemala.
And is that a requirement both under BIA law and our law to establish a cognizable particular social group?
Yes, it is. It's one of the three elements to establish a cognizable particular social group, social distinction. So to briefly reiterate, although the immigration judge made a corroboration finding, the board did not affirm the merits of that corroboration finding. It made alternative merits determinations. So our position is that the corroboration finding is not properly before this court. As to the merits determinations, there are two that cover the entirety of the asylum claim, unable or unwilling, and whether he established his membership as an heir in his particular social groups. The other two findings each cover one of the particular social groups. Nexus goes to heir of his particular agricultural family, and the social distinction goes to his more broad being an heir to a large plot of land in Guatemala. If the court has no further questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you, Ms. Williams.
Thank you.
And Mr. Dominguez, you've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, specifically, I'd like to return to the nexus requirement, which you discussed with my colleague. And I would like to point to the 11th Circuit cases of Perez Sanchez versus Attorney General 935 F3rd 1148 from 2019. In addition to Paz Mesa versus Attorney General, case number 21.
It's an unpublished case, Paz Mesa.
It is. In Perez Sanchez, they specifically held that there was nexus because it was impossible to disentangle the extortion and the specific
Sanchez
motivations.
Sanchez Castro, though, it was able to.
It was, yes.
And isn't that the case? In other words, the way you defined the PSG was that it was related to heirs of this family. And so that's what it has to be connected to.
Correct.
And here, it seems to be there's evidence in the record to suggest that it's not heirs that the great uncle is targeting. It is people that are in the way of standing in the way of him assert of him owning the entire plot of land. And so if you assert your interest in property, then it indicates that he is offing you. But there are heirs living in Guatemala under the undisputed record that are living perfectly fine and free because they have not asserted their interests. In other words, they're not standing in the way of the great uncle's nefarious plan, right?
So I believe in regards to the other heirs, the respondent testified that the family hasn't heard of the other brothers that are on this.
They're living somewhere else in Guatemala.
Yes, and that the family has essentially not heard from them.
One was murdered for a completely independent reason, right?
Correct. One was killed. So we do believe, and specifically, I think it points that the record establishes that every other single person who was murdered in this case, the six other people, were in fact members of this particular social group. So we would
that is certainly a characteristic they share, but that's not the central reason. The reason is because each of those people asserted their interest and were on the property, and he wanted it to get it for himself. Not that they were heirs themselves, right? Isn't that different?
Not necessarily. I don't think the record necessarily supports that, because in this case, for instance, his grandfather who was murdered, he had two other uncles under that would have been in line underneath the grandfather. So the grandfather would have had a first inherit. So they wouldn't have been asserting their interest. They were simply there with the grandfather. Meanwhile, they were also murdered. This is Johnny and Uber, who were also murdered.
These ones were murdered together, right?
Yes, they were the two murdered together, even though they wouldn't have been in the position. It was the grandfather who was asserting their land. So there's evidence that it wasn't necessarily all people who were pressing their land. And briefly to finish up, I just want to say, in response to Judge Lagoa's question as to the this interplay as to when the continuance has to be requested for or not, I would just raise that as to the statute, it creates three specific duties of the immigration judge. Number one, to find determine whether the testimony was credible. Number two, whether that testimony, credible testimony, satisfies the burden of proof. If it doesn't satisfy the burden of proof, the judge must determine whether it's reasonable to require or to reasonable that the applicant acquire that evidence. At that point, an applicant wouldn't know those determinations until the final decision of the immigration judge is announced. He can only make those findings in the final determination, at which point the proceedings are closed and it's too late to ask for the continuance. Therefore, we posit that the duty arises of the immigration judge if he determines those things, and it would be reasonable to grant the continuance.
I guess what your argument or your position is that once the IJ makes a determination that they needed further corroboration evidence and they tell you what it would be, then you would ask for an opportunity to provide that or explain why you can't?
Well, we first explain whether the judge should inquire whether it's reasonable to provide it or not. And if it's reasonable, we believe that duty's on the immigration judge to grant the continuance, because the applicant, if you're waiting for those determinations, you would only receive those findings at the proceeding when the decision is announced. And at that point, the proceedings are closed and it's too late for the applicant to affirmatively ask for the continuance. So with that, respectfully request the court to grant the petition for review. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, counsel. And so that completes our docket this morning, and the court is going to be adjourned.